How much time? 30? 30 seconds. You are. I'm on right now. I don't believe you. What?
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
All right, we're on.
Ready, Phil.
We're on in 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
I can picture every move that a man could make. Getting lost in her loving is your first mistake. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back steps. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight as we get set for the exile, the send-off tonight, as eight players, eight contestants of Survivor will be heading home, heading back to native land off of Survivor Island. Jason, you're going to still be with us for at least another couple rounds, which is good. Yes. So how's everything going in your world today? How's life?
Good. I want to say happy birthday to my brother. It's his birthday today.
Hey, happy birthday. There you go.
Turned the big 3-0.
Wow, there we go.
Yeah.
It's a mark.
Yeah, exactly. So
crossing by that check post. Good for him. We were talking about this before the show. This song, fantastic song, obviously, written by the late and the great Gordon Lightfoot, and great Canadian singer in terms of going, but this song has so many dark messages, dark meanings to it, and I'll turn it up a little bit so you can hear a little bit of the lyrics. But so again, the song is Sundown by the late Canadian Gordon Lightfoot. It was his most lucrative song and a number one hit, but it is absolutely the darkest song in its meaning. And you were laughing because you were like, I had no idea about this.
Yep.
So the song was written about a woman by the name of Kathy Smith, for those who don't know, who was a backup singer for Lightfoot before becoming his mistress in the 1970s. And it speaks of Lightfoot's jealousy when she used to go out and used to be out on her own. The jealousy that he experienced when he was basically at home and she was out. Mm-hmm. Smith was well known in the Canadian music scene for eye-catching beauty, which, I mean, is one thing, I guess. But she was linked to Levon Helm before he joined the group The Band, which, I mean, was huge in Canada and certainly throughout the world for a while. And she went back to him after breaking up with Lightfoot after violent bouts of I guess, you know, just encounters that they had, including one where Lightfoot broke her cheekbone. I mean, that's crazy.
You never would have known with the lyrics of a song like this.
And again, I mean, we'll roll it back a little bit here. You can hear him warn her about coming home in the song, and you kind of go, wow, that changes this song in a big way. Yeah. We'll get to more Kathy Smith in a second, but legitimately, listen to the lyrics that are coming up here, because it's one of those things where after knowing some of the stuff I know now, I'm like, this song is way scarier, way darker than it should be.
Yeah.
From the point of view of Lightfoot, anyway.
See her looking fast in her faded jeans. She's a hard-loving woman, got me feeling mean. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping around my back stairs.
So it's basically a warning not to come home.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is on its own is bad in terms of what you hear. But let's get into why that is a little crazy now. Because Smith was cited in Lightfoot's divorce papers when he got divorced. It was the most expensive settlement in Canadian history at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up in California, where she became a drug dealer for rock and rollers like Keith Richards and Ronnie Wood.
Which is wild.
While she was singing backup for Hoyt Axton as he went through his own cocaine addiction. So she was like basically in the middle of being a dealer for all of these rich and famous people.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up going back to meet up with Levon Helm, which when the band appeared on Saturday Night Live, which is how she met John Belushi. And now you're going to go, well, Belushi was a huge drug user. Yeah, that's exactly right. And Smith's life took an just a crazy turn in 1982. She was the person who injected comedian John Belushi with a fatal dose of cocaine and heroin. Something that she ended up serving 15 months in the California penal system for after admitting her role in the comedian's death in a National Enquirer article.
Which is wild. The fact that it
the National Enquirer
that
was
she
like,
ratted herself out like that.
The National Enquirer was actually like legitimate news at that point.
Yeah, for once.
So, I mean, you kind of go, well, I mean, that's kind of crazy. After serving her sentence, she was deported back to Canada, obviously, mm-hmm. where she wrote a book all about the whole sort of experience and landed in Toronto, where she worked as a legal secretary while being a drug prevention advocate as well in terms of talking to kids in high school and stuff like
At
that.
At least she turned it around?
She turned it around a little bit, I guess, but she passed away in August 2020 in Maple Ridge, BC at the age of 73. And, I mean, the only thing Lightfoot could say after she passed away is that he couldn't say a bad word about her. So
well, he wrote a whole song about it.
He kind of wrote a whole song about how bad she was. So bit. I mean, yeah, that song took a again, I was kind of like, oh, you know, what's the meaning of the song, looking up thinking like, you know, he's talking about sundown,
like, oh, no.
Sundown, and you know this went way off the rails.
It's like one of those rabbit holes that you're like never expecting, and you're half an hour in, you're like, it just keeps going.
Well, I mean, speaking of keep going, I mean, it's going to be sundown for eight people at least in terms of what's going on here, because I mean, their survivor is over. So we're going to get to that in a second here. Jason, your thoughts on the playoffs so far? Obviously, we're into the second round now, but thoughts on that first round before we get into some of these? I'm going to start making some phone calls, but let's hear what you think. I mean, of the eight teams that advanced, mm-hmm. the eight teams that went home, what are your thoughts on how that first round went?
I am so... I have had problems in the past with how the playoff seeding has worked in this new divisional format. I've had some problems with it in the past. I've always thought, like, okay, you're putting, in a lot of situations, you're putting two really good teams when you get to the 2-3 spot in each division. Specifically, I'm looking at like the Atlantic Division as in particular, because you've got the top three of Boston, Toronto, Tampa Bay, and after the first round, one of them is out. I've had problems with that in the past, but I think that this first round was one of the tightest, best first rounds that we've had in quite a while, where there wasn't any serious... Like, I remember doing my bracket, and I was agonizing over a lot of the picks. Like, the only series where I was really like, oh, it's going to go this way was Vegas-Winnipeg. That was the only series where I was like, oh, yeah, it's going to be like five games, and they'll be done, and... You know, we're gonna keep going on. All of the other series, it basically came down to a coin flip, and I was like, I gotta go off of like vibes, basically.
Coin flip, eh?
Yeah, like I with the New Jersey New York, I was like, okay, can New York's like a lot better, but New Jersey's got the vibes and they've got the energy coming into the playoffs. The Seattle Avalanche series, like the Avs are a defending champion, but they're also looking a lot different than they did last year, and Seattle's just vibing coming into the playoffs. And I am so happy with how this first round went. I was glued to my TV every single
It was good
game.
Hockey. I'm not going to lie about that either. It was good. Fantastic.
So it was so good that even my girlfriend got into hockey for
look
a little
at
bit.
That. See, so, we convinced somebody to take a look there, which is always good. I'm going to get the first guy on that we have on. He's actually going to do two of them because one of them is the assistant GM is currently playing soccer. So
okay.
Let's bring him in. Jared, can you hear us? You there, Jared? Hello? Jared. Oh, wait. Oh, I think he hung up on us.
No. Jared, come back.
Maybe I hung up on him. Give me 1 second. We're going to bring Jared back. Hold on.
He's going to call him back. It's never easy. I think the best series just... The Seattle... Colorado series was probably the best series the entire first round, but you can't argue with the Boston Florida piece. But we're going to hear a little bit more about another pair of teams here.
We should have them on there now. Jared, can you hear us?
I can.
There.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, it was the looks like the phone got bumped by the monitor there, so it didn't quite hang itself up properly. So.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to make the move.
Blaming the monitor.
I had to make the move. Hey, I'm going to make the move on the monitor there and make sure you got enough room to talk to us. But
Jared, how come you set up the board like this? Jeez.
Yeah, we need
What's
way
going
more.
On?
We're going to have to redesign this entire booth now for more hockey
so
stuff.
So many complaints. So many complaints from you guys. Always. So,
GM Jared, you're going to be doing two of them. We're going to start with Ethan's because Ethan was the first team that was out, unfortunately, in the Winnipeg. He had the Winnipeg Jets. Are you prepared to read his prepared statement?
Yeah, it's pretty brief.
That's okay. Brevity is okay in some of these cases. And I mean, like the Jets, it was a brief stay in the playoffs as well. So it might be perfect for what we're going to see. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, well, all it really says over and over and over again is the word disgusting. Disgusting. Over and over and over again. And he's hoping that there's going to be some changes in the off season. And, you know, he was pretty excited to get the Jets because that's his team, of course. He should have also known that ultimately they were going to disappoint, as they always do.
It was disappointing. I won't take anything away from Ethan on that. It certainly is the accurate word I think a lot of us are feeling right now.
Very much in agreement with Rick Bonus.
Not only watching them play, but some of the exit interviews afterwards, which we'll talk about in a bit. But,
or lack of exit interviews.
Right, exactly.
Or lack of accountability.
Or having your GM lecture your media and fans on how hard it is to make the playoffs.
I wonder if Blake Wheeler has a mirror in his entire house so he can look at himself in some depth.
I'm going to say no to that. I don't think he does, but... let's get to your team then, Jared. You had the Islanders. You were prepared to do the Islanders now.
Sure.
Okay, let's dive in whenever you're ready here, sir.
Okay, so first I want to apologize to the New York Islanders for getting picked by me. Basically, I've been in this pool pretty much as long as you've run it, and I don't think I've ever gotten out of the first round, so I put the hex on the Islanders. I'm going to just go out there and say that, you know, as soon as they got picked by me, their season was done. They might as well have just packed it in at that point and just said, you know what, we're good. So
it's the GM Jared curse. Is that what you're saying?
The GM Jared curse. From one curse GM to another GM, old Lou there. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Okay.
hate to see him go, but you know, yeah.
We're good with that. If that's mm-hmm. If that's your exit interview, I don't mind that. That one was good.
I know. You've got a few to do tonight. So
we do have a few. We're still we're squeezing them in terms of getting them going here. But I thought it was funny, and again, not funny. I guess maybe not funny, but I thought it was. I mean. The Islanders just scrap their way into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks, okay, they're going to get there. Like they're going to be okay. They're going to be fine. They kind of back their way in because Pittsburgh couldn't win a game, which is not surprising the way they played this year. But
do you want to talk about Pittsburgh?
No, I don't.
No, are you sure?
That'll fill the entire show.
Believe me, I could fill probably 60 minutes just screaming about Ron Hextall, but that's just me. I really thought that they had a better shot, though, with Sorokin in that. And only because he won them a couple of games down the stretch that you kind of went, man, like, they're going to be a tough out if Sorokin gets hot. And he never really caught fire against Carolina, so.
No, and as we're seeing that in the playoffs, goaltending is gonna steal you series. And, I mean... I had the misfortune of seeing the Jets and the Islanders play this year in one of the worst hockey games I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, it's kind of fitting.
Two teams that just didn't want to be there.
No, they can both go away. See you later.
Well, they officially are both gone in terms of that setup, and we're going to have to do the, unfortunately, the...
Torch? Do you have a torch snuffing?
How have
we not been sued on this for copyright?
Again, it's a parody, so we're getting away with a little bit of creative control here, right? Like that's
a little
what
bit
it
of
is.
Fair use.
A little
is
bit
that
of parody.
What it is?
No, it's a parody. Yeah. I mean, believe me, we're not sending people to an island, and we're not having them do ridiculous food challenges.
It's not in the budget.
Yeah, I mean, our solid budget of $0 every year doesn't allow us for that to do that kind of stuff. So.
So are you guys in the pool?
No. We cannot because we don't want people.
You got to stay above the fray.
We don't want people thinking that we fixed it so that we ended up with the prizes at the end. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so who do you think's got the best chance? What are your predictions going forward?
My bracket's busted.
I won't even ask you for cup winners, cup finals.
I'm going to go for cup final because we are offering prizes up for both the finalist and the Stanley Cup champion, obviously.
Pretty awesome prizes, too.
Yeah, I mean, one's a Kraken jersey, the other one's a Jets Aviator jersey, so we're pretty happy to offer those. But I want to see Seattle there. I know they're probably not going to end up there, unfortunately. I want to see them there badly.
They've been lots of fun to watch.
I'm feeling a Vegas-Seattle, a battle of the expansion franchises.
In the Western Conference final would be good, yeah. I think it's going to be Vegas. I think Vegas is going from the West, unfortunately. I think that they just have enough scoring with their $97 million payroll that they can get in there. And from the East, unfortunately, I think it's going to be Carolina. I think it's going to be Carolina-Vegas final. I think Carolina's just got way too much going for them. And even though they're missing two of their best players, they don't seem to be stopped by anything right now, including whoever they're playing.
Right. Are we in unison on that?
Oh, no. I'm going purely off vibes.
Okay.
Seattle, New Jersey.
What? Wow.
Purely off vibes.
Purely off vibes.
I think they've got the energy and the heart, and I think we're going to be surprised.
Can you imagine if Florida gets by Toronto, just how crazy that would be?
Well, I'm going to be in Toronto the first week of June. So, I want there to be a city to go back to. I don't want it to be on fire when I get there.
They're not Vancouver. They don't light things up. They don't light their whole city on fire.
Just wait.
Who are you picking then, Jared? Who do you see going through?
So I would love to see, and I know this is going to be an unpopular, but I would love to see Edmonton and Toronto play just because it's an all-Canadian matchup.
Right.
It's time that a Canadian team wins.
You know what? I'll allow that only if Edmonton wins.
I would hate to see either of them win because both of their fan bases are completely
insufferable.
Yeah.
I think right now that Florida's got that weird thing going on, right? Like they're getting hot at the right time, and they've got, I don't like some of their players, Tkachuk for one, I'm not a fan, but they've got lots of those playoff grit guys that you kind of need. The goaltending, I think, is going to be a question. It would be kind of ironic to see old coach Paul Maurice win after he left Winnipeg. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it would be, if he won, I think that says a lot about what's wrong with this team in Winnipeg, but that's just me.
Wow, yeah. I'm going to say probably Carolina in the East, and whoever comes out of the Edmonton-Vegas series in the West.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it could be a Vegas-Carolina then. Well, there we go. See?
I don't want to see Vegas again. And honestly, I don't want to see Vegas play Seattle because that kind of Gary Bettman will be pretty proud of himself.
Gary's already loving it.
Yeah,
he's already loving it. Florida's made it through. They're looking good.
Three teams that were founded in 2000 or later are playing in the second round of the playoffs.
The only way that it would make it better is if Columbus was still in the playoffs and Arizona had a building to play in.
Well, let's not go too far there.
Well, yeah. But the thing is like Seattle, I've really enjoyed Seattle. I've really liked watching them. I think that it's going to depend on what happens. Is McCann back playing?
No, not yet. No.
Yeah, so that's such a huge hole for them to fill that I think at some point their luck is going to run out. But it's fun watching them.
We'll see what happens. I'm excited for Seattle. I mean, I think every game that Seattle wins is a credit to all of those players who are either shrugged off by their teams or were thought to be too expensive for whatever system they were trying to fit into. But Seattle's picked up all of those guys. I mean, from the Bjorkstrands to the Yanni Gourdes to the Tolvanens, there are a lot of guys on that are proving everybody wrong right now. And I think that's a big thing about the Seattle team saying to everybody, like, you don't need a ton of all-stars. You just need a ton of guys playing well.
Yeah. Guys buying into a system, and I love watching Matty Beniers He's a great hockey player.
Maddie is a good player. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, we're always sad when we have to send people off, Jared. I mean, we never want to do that. But for Ethan, we'll make sure that he gets the proper send-off.
Travis spoken.
And then for yourself, unfortunately, with the Islanders, we got to send you home as well. So,
Travis spoken.
Mr. Probst has made his statement. We are officially done with the Islanders and the Jets there. So thank you for doing this. Thanks for participating as always. And we'll see you next year for the curse again.
Thanks, guys.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
So there is GM Jared with, unfortunately, his curse, mm-hmm. which doesn't help. But
I want to go back and see the history of that curse.
I'll go back and take a look at it. We got a couple of shows that we can review that on and see what's going on with that. But I'm sure that's there in terms of, I think he's probably, I want to say, honestly, he might be right. I'm not saying that to be mean, but I think he might be right. So who knows what's going to go on with that. We're going to move to our next exit, which unfortunately is Matt. Now, Matt is in Fort Frances, Ontario right now, so he is unable to call in. He is working out there, doing a bunch of work out there. So we're going to hand this one off to Jason because it's the Minnesota Wild. And Jason, you told me that you had a lot to say about the Wild.
Yes.
And we'll see exactly what that is right away here when we get everything sort of going here. But I'm going to say right now, for all of the overspending that Bill Guerin did, that's just a mistake.
It is, but it is also like they've got the.
Are you ready?
Do
you
want
to go? Okay, hold on. Let's get the music on. Hold on. Here we go. And whenever you're ready.
Minnesota. Why? Why do you continually break my heart this way? Year after year of first round exits, I keep saying they're going to pull it together. They're going to pull it together. Eventually, they're going to get there. The team that was assembled this year was probably one of the best Minnesota Wild teams that has ever been put together, despite the fact that they have got those albatross buyout penalties for Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. I don't know why those contracts were ever signed with those two guys, but whatever. Why? I had you going all the way. I had you winning the cup. I put my faith behind you, and you give me hope, and then you take it away because you can't score a goal on Jake Oettinger, and you let Jake Oettinger, the hometown kid, beat you. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed in you.
The bracket-busting Minnesota Wild, eh?
And Boston busted the other side, so it doesn't matter anymore.
I got to say, if your name is we're done with the music. Jason's given his exit. He's now angry. But the fact that if your name wasn't Kaprizov or Hartman, you couldn't score. I mean, I know that they got Matt Boldy. I know that they got, a bunch of the guys that they'd poured a bunch of money into. But I agree. I mean, if you can't score and you can't play. Again, Klingberg didn't even play in the series.
Yeah.
Like, you acquired a guy, and I know he got hurt, and it's not, you can't control that. Mm-hmm. But again, you went out and you got all these guys to have them play in the playoffs, and then none of them show up.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard for me to sit here and go, it's his fault, or, he didn't do, he didn't play well, or he didn't play well. I just don't think that, again, your high-priced, high-valued goalie in Marc-Andre Fleury watched most of the playoffs from the bench, and if you're not going to sign him this year, fine, I get that.
You've got Wallstedt in the mix.
Gustafsson and Wallstedt should be your guys next year, and legitimately, Dumba's gone. We already know that. They can't afford to keep him. You're starting over now.
Yeah.
Like, it's time to rebuild for Minnesota. Yeah.
And I hate to say it like that. It's a lot of it comes down, like, this was a team that was built with a lot. I liken them to the way they felt a lot of what Seattle felt like coming into the playoffs, where it's the heart, it's the effort, it's the grit. This is a team that has some pretty tough customers in there, guys with a lot of heart, but when the rubber hit the road, a lot of those guys, like Marcus Foligno, something happened. Like something, it feels like something snapped in those later games where he kind of went off.
Okay, but if you're Minnesota and you're going to lead the playoffs in hits, like Seattle leads the playoffs in hits right now, but if you're Minnesota and you're going to lead the playoff in hits, it means you don't have the puck.
Yeah.
Like, there's a significant problem here. Dallas is second lowest hit in hits in the playoffs. Yeah. Everybody talked about, oh, what a physical series. Oh, what a physical series.
Yeah.
Yes, because Minnesota chased everybody around.
And credit to them for the comeback ability that they showed. Like, they'd be down and then they'd fight back, but also Dallas had the same fight. Like, it was a very evenly matched series, but the difference came in that Dallas got the goaltending from Jake Oettinger, who's a world beater right now.
Right.
And they got a performance from Miro Heiskanen that was otherworldly.
Well, and Roope Hintz.
So, like,
that second line showed up.
It was such a great series by Dallas. So it was just like, I can see whether it's just one of those things where the pieces fell apart in the worst way possible for that team.
Well, Minnesota's out, and we don't have to worry about them anymore because they're just apparently a perennial letdown for Jason, which doesn't...
It's been like this way for a long time.
Doesn't work for anybody. So, Mr. Probst, let's bring you back in.
Travis spoken.
And we'll end that as Minnesota is out, and we will move on. The next team that we're going to look at is the New York Rangers as we bring Barry in. Barry, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
There we go. As we get set for the New York Rangers, sir, are you ready to discuss your team's follies?
Yes, I've written a few things down here, and I'll just...
When you're ready, let us have them.
Okay, I'm going to start rambling on now. I'm glad I had the... I thought I was glad I had the New York Rangers this year, and I thought, with their experience and talent and the players they added, they had a good shot at the Cup. The Devils, took a couple of games to figure out the Rangers, and, I just thought that, with the speed of the Devils, they were kind of unbelievable. Devils had the smarts, youth on their side. The Rangers from the last couple of years never really showed up. I was really surprised that they lost, and I'm sure a lot of the Rangers fans were too. The Rangers exit interviews, I wasn't overly impressed with. Too many excuses, not enough responsibility for their own efforts on the ice. Fans don't want to hear excuses. They want to basically see a good effort from their... doesn't matter what team it is. They want to see... fans want to see a good effort from their teams on the ice. And they spend a lot of money on these tickets to go. The average guy can't really afford it. But you know what? You know, I hear these different general managers talking about, well, we need bums in the seats next year, and the prices are going up. So, you know, really, put the product on the ice and basically give the effort. The players need to give the effort. And, you know, I think that's all that fans can ask. Like, put a good product on, give the effort, and, you know, you will get more bums in the seat then. But like I say, what I've seen over the last few years, and these players making excuses and all these in the exit interviews, you know, they need to, you know, quit worrying about the excuses and put the effort in there. And I think we'll all be a lot happier as hockey fans. And that's about it.
That'll do. That'll hit every nail on the head right there that we had. I just thought, I mean, again, I know that they went out and they got Patrick Kane. I know they went out and they got, you know, Tarasenko. I know they went, you know, they have Panarin. They have Zibanejad. I just, again, call me crazy. Call me insane. Patrick Kane is not a good player.
Yeah.
And I wish that people would stop putting fantastic offensive player, but his overall game is trash. And I wish people would see that about him, because the moment they acquired him, I was like, they're going to have a hard time with anybody in the playoffs now, because they don't have that, as you said, they don't have that grit. They don't have that pushback that they need, because Patrick Kane just doesn't play that way.
Mm-hmm. And like, even back, you look back in the Chicago days, because a lot of people were talking about the reuniting of Kane and Panarin. And during that period, they either had Jonathan Toews or Marcus Kruger in between
right.
them.
Right, yeah.
Who are very defensively responsible players. And I think that's part of what they were missing, is that even if you reunite those guys, like, you need the other side of the puck, which Kane clearly doesn't have.
And no, yeah.
I don't know if Panarin has either.
I mean, Panarin back checks, but I don't think he back checks as hard as he should. But I mean, at the end of the day, when you look at that defense as well, I mean, Trouba's out there just trying to throw big hits. He's out there trying to make highlight reels as opposed to play. Again, when they were talking about the Timo Meier hit, and I know that Timo Meier got up and I know that he's fine or whatever, but again, Trouba could have taken the puck off his stick and gone the other way 4-on-2 if he just would have picked the puck off of his stick instead of trying to throw that big hit. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand why guys are, and I know why, again, I know why the hits are there and I know why they want to be on highlight reels, but it seemed like the Rangers were more interested in just making highlights than they were trying to make wins.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. To me, the Rangers were overpriced talented and not enough of the little things right when it came to
I just found that, too. I just thought when I was watching them, I watched, like, second game was over, and I just seemed like the Devils basically kind of, they got it right at that moment. I thought after that second game, they had got it, and they basically, you know, figured it out, that what they had to do to beat the Rangers. And then you look like Lindy Ruff's there, you know, and guys like that.
Andrew Burnett.
And, you know, maybe he basically said something that maybe those young guys were missing. But, you know, you looked at Hughes and what he was doing. I mean, it was unbelievable.
No, he's like, incredible.
I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to those young guys. And I just think the youth, they outsmarted them, whatever. I don't know.
Out everything. Out hustled, out gritted, outsmarted, outplayed.
Yeah. And just one other thing. When Jared said he put the curse on the Islanders, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, I had the Islanders, and they got kicked out the first round last year, I think.
So, yeah.
I'm not sure if that's right.
It might be Lou, then. Maybe it's GM Lou Lamoriello. Yeah. That's the problem, then.
Yeah, I don't know. But I know one year I had them, and I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but basically, it was the same thing with me, and I couldn't believe it. I thought, yeah, these guys are looking good, and then, boom, they're gone.
Well, speaking of gone, the Rangers are gone, unfortunately, so we're going to have to give you the old Jeff Probst here.
Travis spoken.
As the Rangers are sent home, and then that'll be the end of the contest for you as well, Barry. We always appreciate you coming on, though, and playing, though. So.
You know what? I really appreciate the Survivor Series, and I really enjoy it. And like I say, I'll be back next year.
We'll be looking forward to it for next year's contest, because it's always fun to get everybody on and have everybody going. But see if we can get you out of the first round next year for sure. If that's the case,
then
get you off one of those New York teams that loses in the first round. So
maybe I can get Boston.
Hey, there's another first round team though, so no, you never know.
Exactly.
All right, we'll talk to you next year for sure.
Okay, take care.
Take it easy.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye. So there's another out as well. So we got half the contest out now. The next person that's supposed to come on is Katrina. Katrina had the Los Angeles Kings. Now, Katrina's out tonight, which is fine. She's actually got plans tonight. So she informed me early in the week that she wouldn't be able to do this, which is fine. So I'm going to take L.A.
Awesome.
And I'm going to, unfortunately, it's not going to, this is going to be probably one of the shortest, most unnerving, most unappealing exit interviews that anybody's ever done, because mine is going to sound exactly like this as I bring on the music. I'm sorry, but McDavid and Draisaitl. The LA Kings had no answer for them. I get that the Kings played hard and they have a good up-and-coming team. They got some good young players. But when Leon Draisaitl is setting NHL records for goal scoring, and Connor McDavid is lighting the lamp in terms of, you know, assists and scoring goals as well. They're unstoppable. They're unbeatable. I mean, you're going to need a big defensive effort, and I know the LA doesn't have that defense right now. I know they're working to try and bring younger guys in and new guys in, but you can't stop those two guys with a bunch of guys that legitimately, in a 7-game series, they're going to figure you out.
Yep.
And that's the one thing that I think Vegas has to worry about. I think that, you know, if Edmonton's to advance, Seattle and or Dallas has to worry about, you've got to find a way to shut those guys down. And if you can't, your series is over quickly. Mm. So I want to give more credit to LA. I thought they played hard. I thought they found a couple of nights there where they played extremely well to shut those guys down. But you're not going to shut them down for seven straight games, for four straight wins anyway, in a sweep. You're definitely not going to beat them in a 7-game series if you don't have the experience and the effort that is required to shut them down. And that means three or four lines that can roll with with Leon and Connor and shut them down completely. Again, there wasn't a lot of other guys. Zach Hyman had a couple of big goals. Vander Kane had a goal, I think, in there or whatever. But it was really the Leon Draisaitl and the Connor McDavid show in that first round.
Yeah, we always think about how different that hockey is as a sport, where you don't really have those situations where a single guy or two guys can take over a game. But those two guys are so good they can.
They absolutely do. And I mean, look at Leon the other night. Four goals, and I mean, that's
exactly
ridiculous.
And but the different, like, the thing that's different about this Oilers team is that the defense has been overhauled so much, where they have a piece that they've been missing for years and years and years, but they're still missing that goaltending.
Right, and that's the big thing. The goaltending is going to kill them if they can't get a better effort out of Skinner and Campbell.
So if you have a team like Vegas who can get offensively can get past the defense and can match Edmonton in scoring punch, that's where this series will become a bit of a dogfight, where I don't know if LA had the tools and the weapons to be able to match up against Edmonton and didn't defensively have any counter to whatever Edmonton could put at them, which Vegas now can.
I mean, Drew Doughty is their experienced defenseman, right? I mean, he's already sort of long in the tooth, so to speak, in terms of just his foot speed. And I mean, you really look at the rest of it. Can you name another defender on the LA Kings right now? Offhand? Sean Durzi, maybe, but he's not really a big defenseman. So I can't really look at this and go, there are a lot of guys that LA has right now that would be good shutdown guys when you're playing a Connor McDavid or playing a Draisaitl. And that's maybe the key, is that they don't have that guy. Again, Edmonton went out and got Ekholm. Edmonton has a great, you know, great new power play with Bouchard playing on there after they moved Brody.
Yep.
And I really look at that and I go, they've got a couple of guys who can help out the nurses, help out, you know, those guys in terms of getting things going on that blue line, but they don't have to worry about scoring 100 points either. They've got a couple of guys on the back end who can score. Let Ekholm be the shutdown guy. Let Desharnais be the shutdown guy in terms of that big 6-7 frame of his. I just don't think that there was enough weaponry on that Kings team to put any sort of fear of death into those Edmonton defense. And on the other side, if you can't stop, again, you can't stop the two big, the double-headed beast there, it's not going to work. So, unfortunately, LA, you're going to get Probst out of here as well.
Travis spoken.
And that's the end of the LA Kings. We'll move on. Miranda, who was supposed to do this, she didn't feel comfortable enough talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning. Jason, are you prepared to cover for Miranda then?
Yes, I'm
ready.
Let's get
her going here right away. Let me just get the exit song queued up again. Are you ready? Here we go, sir.
Yep. How? I get this is a Tampa Bay team that's been to three straight Stanley Cup finals. They've won a couple cups. They're still the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they're still built to win Stanley Cups and still challenge for Stanley Cups. But how did you let Toronto get past you? Like, full credit to Toronto and the effort that they put in. They actually showed they kind of turned a bit of a corner in a few of those games where they were able to come back, and they didn't kind of fall to, you know, the lack of effort and the lack of pushback that they've shown in previous years. They actually gritted out some wins, and I think that gave them the lift that they needed. And this Tampa Bay team, this is the thing where this is their rest year. They get to have a little bit longer of a summer. Hockey's back to the post-COVID schedule and the weirdness that we've had the couple of years with late seasons and weird starts. They're going to be back, and they're going to be a problem for their window is still open for this team. They just need to get healthy, get right, get some rest, and make a few little tweaks here around the edges here and there, and then they can come back.
You're hopeful, which sounds good. I'm less hopeful because I think the problem with the Lightning this year was the fact that they had less depth than they did before. And I say that because when Chernak went down, that entire series changed.
Yep.
And granted, Michael Bunting with a dirty, dirty play on that. I'm not going to deny that. But the fact that nobody could step in and step up to take that spot from Chernak was, in my view, part of the problem. Secondly, when you talk about building for the future, I don't know if that's going to be there either after you traded 5 picks for Tanner Janot.
That was a really bad trade.
Who legitimately didn't play in this series.
Yeah.
And if you're going to deal that many picks for a guy who didn't show up, I don't know if you have the depth to go forward either. Don't get me wrong. Vasilevskiy will always get you to the playoffs.
Yep.
But getting back to the heights that you were in the playoffs is going to be very hard when it comes to injuries and the lack of depth that you have.
And especially when guys like Pat Maroon, who you really lean on, and Corey Perry and
right.
Pierre-Edouard Belmar, who you really lean on to put the opponent off their game, when they're losing their cool, like particularly Pat Maroon did, and doing dumb things and not earning the power plays that they used to,
right,
where they're getting pulled out of the scrum and they're getting those coincidentals, you're really taking one of the strengths away from this team and putting you at a disadvantage when you're against a team like Toronto, who's so deadly on the power play.
And I mean, that's the thing, is that Toronto rolls out, you know, two lines of complete, you know, legitimately all-stars on every other team.
Yeah.
Whether it be Matthews, Nylander, Marner, you know, Tavares. I mean, they've got more talent on those two power play lines than most teams
Matthew
have.
Matthew Nyes.
Right. Matthew Nyes has looked every bit as good as he should. And I mean, give them credit for picking him up as well. But
Ryan O'Reilly is your third line center.
But that's what I mean. Like, they don't need to worry about problems in terms of depth. They have depth. They can handle it. Whereas Tampa Bay, after that sort of top line, and again, Stamkos was almost invisible.
Yep.
Kucherov played well. Point played well, I guess, in terms of the way they played. But legitimately, that it's that back end where Hedman was walking on one leg, basically, skating on one leg, and they forced him to play. Well, not forced him to, but he chose to play that way because they had nobody else after Chernak went down. It's tough for Tampa Bay to get back to that same level they were at, I think. So we'll have to see where the offseason goes and see how everything works. But without that blue line that dominant blue line that they had for the longest time, with Sergachev, with Hedman, with Chernak, with, you know, Jan Ruda, who's now in Pittsburgh, some of those guys, legitimately, they missed in a big way this season. So unfortunately for Tampa, that also means that we need to send them home.
Travis spoken.
They are done. That's the end of Tampa Bay. So we're going to move on. Unfortunately, I'm still trying to get a hold of one contestant who hasn't responded yet. So we'll see if she's available. I'm going to go to Boston, though.
Yep.
Boston, who, as we know, was the best regular season team in the history of the NHL this year. Jason, you made a good point, and we'll bring that up in a bit here. But I'm going to talk a little bit about Boston because, again, I'm going to get into this, going to get into the exit interview here as we bring the Boston Bruins to a close this season. Boston is one of those teams where they're fantastic in the regular season. They look good. They're playing, you know, just different game than the rest of the league in terms of how well they were. However, the one thing that killed me when Boston started playing Florida is that Boston tried to match Florida's dirty grittiness in terms of the way they played. They got away from their own game. And I don't understand why that happened. Charlie McAvoy, great player, fantastic, kind of negated by the fact that he was always chasing somebody. Again, you look at the guys like the Jake DeBrusks, the guys that are lower down length. I'm not worried about the Bergerons and the Marchands and the Bertuzzis. They're going to score. They're going to do what they're supposed to do. But the second line, the third line, the Krejcis, where we lost some of that really good Boston sort of transition game is. And again, credit Florida for this. They stepped up and they played really well. But there wasn't that push from Boston that I expected, like they normally did in the regular season. And you kind of hope that they're going to get something going. Now, if the reports are correct and Allmark was as hurt as he was going into the playoffs, then you can understand the goaltending maybe taking a bit of a dive. And certainly it didn't look as good as it did in the regular season. That's one of the things that I think that nobody really gets a chance to talk about, is how hurt these guys were going into the playoffs. But if that's the case, Jeremy Swayman should have been in the net long before Allmark ever let it get to a seventh game. I get that Allmark's your guy and he's gonna go out there and battle, but if he is as hurt where he cannot move as well as he was, Jeremy Swayman should have been in net for the Boston Bruins, and they should have gone with him just to make sure that they had a chance at winning this series. Again, they put Swayman in at the very end. He had a great, great series. He lost in overtime on that Carter Verhaeghe shot. Again, great, great effort from the Florida Panthers. I can't take anything away from them. But at the end of the day, the Boston Bruins were upset by their own depth, I think, in terms of just not having the depth to get out of that first round, simply because they found a team that knocked them off their game enough to take four wins and seven games away from them. I mean, credit to the Panthers. They deserve every bit of that win, but Boston, I thought, really got off their game and really didn't get a chance to play their game very well. Now, again, you can argue with me all you want about that. You can argue the fact that that Boston, you know, maybe deserved a better fate in terms of where they finished up or in, you know, who they're playing. But again, Florida adapted. Florida forced Boston to play their game more than Boston played their own game. And again, with Allmark hurting as bad as he was, I think it's a serious mistake by John Montgomery not to have gone to Jeremy Swayman earlier in that series than what he was. Again, that 7-5 game, it looked like he was that was a struggle the entire game for Allmark. I would have had him out of there way earlier than where he was. But that's, to me, that's what was wrong with the Bruins. They just didn't play their game. Mm-hmm. They played Florida's game, and at the end of the day, it bit him in the rear end.
For me, part of it is I think they just ran out of gas a little bit. Where sure. If you watch the Bruins games throughout the year, they were playing high-intensity hockey basically all season long. And it paid off in the fact that they set that record and whatever, and people are saying it's like the last dance for this group because Bergeron's probably done, Krejci's probably done.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's one of those... It's not like when Tampa lost in the first round a few years ago when they got swept by Columbus. I feel it felt like Boston kind of ran out of gas. And, you know, Allmark played as best as he could all year, was a Vezina-caliber goaltender, and then kind of fell off a little bit.
Do you believe in the fact that, again, Kevin Weeks was the one that reported that he was significantly injured going into the playoffs?
He looked it. Like, I definitely, especially when you play to that caliber and things can happen. Like, how fast it turned felt weird. And I think that it's not an indictment of the platoon style of goaltending.
No, I'm not taking it away from it.
I think that they wanted to ride the hot hand in the playoffs, which was Allmark, and he wasn't ready to go. And we've seen, you know, when you tell a goaltender, hey, are you good to go? They're going to say yes, even if they're not.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing of that.
So I do think there's a little bit of a kernel of truth to what Kevin Weeks said. I totally agree that I think Swayman should have come in there earlier. But yeah, I full credit to Florida and Bobrovsky just getting hot at the right time.
Bobrovsky! I feel bad because, I mean, Bill thought he was going to go all the way to the final in terms mm-hmm. of getting in there. Bill, unfortunately, your team is out now. Bill is currently on the golf course, apparently, so he's not... And not here either. Like, it's... Yep. He, again, for those that don't know, Bill lives outside this province. He is legitimately on the golf course right now where it's 30 degrees.
Yeah, so no blame there.
No, I'm pretty certain. I'm pretty certain I'd give up an excellent interview for a 30 degree day and yeah. a round of golf. But Bill, unfortunately, the Jeff Probst statement has to come here. So,
Travis spoken.
And that will end the Boston Bruins on Survivor Island. I'm going to try one more, but I'll let you talk about this because I know that you're big on Seattle as well. Give us your thoughts on Seattle right now, just in terms of what they did in that first series against Colorado. I'm going to try and get Jenna on the phone. She's mm-hmm. Colorado right now, so hang on to that. But
yeah.
Give us your thoughts on Seattle beating, again, shocking the world and knocking off the defending mm-hmm. champs, I guess.
I feel like a lot of people were sleeping on Seattle this year. I mean, not rightly so, but I think it's expected because they're going up against the Stanley Cup champion. They're this new upstart team. It's year two, where they were last year versus where they are this year. They set an NHL record with their turnaround this year. But coming into this series, it is, I think after what Vegas did, we have to start reevaluating how we look at teams when it comes to the way just the energy around a team feels different. Like I go back to when the Bisons women's team won the national championship, there was a certain energy and air about the team where you knew that like there was something special there. That we've seen this with Mount Royal in the last couple of years, and that's why we've been so high on them for a number of years. Seattle feels like they've got this energy and this attitude that very much reminds me of the 2018 Vegas Golden Knights, where they latched onto that misfit identity and they all bought in. We were talking before this about the role that David Haxtell has played with that team. And granted, his time in Philadelphia was not great. I think that it was a very different situation in Philadelphia, though, that we know now from all the reporting that's come out around, the Fletcher era and the Hextall era, how meddlesome that like old boys club is in Philadelphia. I think in Seattle he's got an ability to build a culture, whereas he was coming into an established culture in an established dressing room in Philadelphia, where he can be more of the coach he was in college, where he is that like kind of very supportive side of like, you know, when you make a mistake, it's fine. We'll fix it. We'll get, you know, you give up a goal, it's okay. We'll give it back. We'll get it back. And you see that from the compete level of this team, where they just don't go away. No matter how many goals you score, they're going to keep coming back. They're going to keep pushing back. They're going to keep being the anti-Winnipeg Jets and just fight and scrap and try and get back in a game. And the way that they've spread this talent throughout this lineup, like, it's making Francis look like a genius.
Well, I mean, I'll take Colorado right now. I mean, you can jump in on Colorado here if you want as well. Jenna, I'm not sure where she is. I know she was working today, but I mean, we'll see if we can catch up with her. But I mean, here is my Colorado one is super, super easy. If you have no depth, you're not going to win the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. You can win in the regular season, but if you have no second line, no third line, and no fourth line that can really make an impact beyond Cale Makar, beyond Sam Girard, beyond, you know, Bowen Byram on the back end, if you only have Rantanen and MacKinnon doing anything up front, you're not going to win a playoff series. Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
It really, to me, it strikes home how special Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh and Chicago were during their runs. The fact that every single time the cap or depth became an issue, they fixed it. Chicago moved out contracts, made those big trades to get guys out of there, and then bought at the deadline to bolster their lineup. But they kept that core group outside of like the big names. Like you kept Chalmers in there, you kept Kruger there, you kept Oduya there, you kept Bickle there for as long as you could. For Tampa Bay, you have the guys buying in to taking a little bit less, taking that haircut to keep the team together, to keep the core together. In Pittsburgh, you had that amazing farm system where they kept pulling guys in who had played for Mike Sullivan before so they could go on that back-to-back run and keep that streak alive. It shows how hard it is to keep a team together, especially when you're as good and as deep as Colorado was. Like, they couldn't have afforded to keep Nazem Kadri, and they couldn't have afforded to keep that band together.
But losing Landeskog didn't help them either.
Exactly. So. But losing Darcy Kempfer didn't help them either.
No.
And they go up against the guy that couldn't get them through in Philip Grubauer.
Right.
So, like, the replacement goaltenders that they got, it was obviously a downgrade from the moment they made those moves. And then, they just kind of, they didn't have it.
You wonder who's going to be, and I hate to say this, and I mean, maybe I'm hopeful because I'm hoping that, you know, maybe the Jets are keeping an eye on this as to what's going on. But you wonder who the next player is that's going to be out in Colorado, because I'm thinking it's got to be a defender at this point. It's either got to be a Girard or a Taves. I don't know if they're obviously not going to move a Makar, and I don't think they're going to give up on a Byram that easy. But if it's a Taves or a Girard, you have to make a play for that guy.
You have to pick up the phone. And if we're talking about a team,
I mean, they let Ryan Graves walk to New Jersey, and he's been fantastic there.
Oh, yeah.
And I really look at that and I go, these guys that come out of Colorado are going to be your next star on this team. They may not be a first line, they may be a second pairing guy, especially if we're going to move down the lineup a little bit. But they're still going to be better than a lot of the guys that are playing in your second pairs right now.
Yeah. And if those guys become available, you have to call. It doesn't matter. Like, if you're going to pick up a Sam Girard, who we actually looked at it before the show.
Right, yeah.
A guy that you passed up on to draft Logan Stanley, of all people.
Please don't say that.
you have to make the call. It doesn't matter if you have to give up a quality piece to get a guy like that to bolster the depth of that defensive core when you've got Sandberg there, you've got Gvenke and Heinola in the minors. You got to clear space somehow, start moving out contracts, moving guys in, change things up. It's going to hurt Colorado immensely because I don't know how they afford to keep any of those guys.
Right.
So it's sad, but I like Colorado's in tough when it comes to contracts.
But I mean, it's the same thing that again, and technically anyway, same thing that Pittsburgh went through, same thing that Chicago went through, same thing that Boston went through a little bit, same thing that Tampa Bay is going through, same thing that Toronto's gone through a couple of times where they had to get rid of guys or had guys, you know, maybe not play as often.
Oh, Jake, just like Jake Muzzin, for example. The great example is Rasmus Sandin.
Well, yeah, I mean, Rasmus Sandin got squeezed out and he went to Washington. Looks like a completely different player now, right? Dmitry Orlov,
because he just didn't have a spot to play in.
Kind of took Dmitry Orlov's spot there and really jumped into it. But I'm interested to see who's going to be available off that Colorado team now that they're going to sort of have to make changes and figure stuff out, because they're going to have to start building that depth back again.
And I'm interested to see what they do with that goaltending situation, because I don't think it's good enough.
Georgiev and Francouz, I don't know if that's going to be a combination you want to stick with for very long.
Weirdly, one of the big things, the big question marks for me all playoffs long is all of these teams with kind of suspect goaltending situations. Not every team has a Jake Oettinger. Not every team has an Andre Vasilevsky, a Connor Hellebuck who you can rely on. A lot of these teams are kind of going with the hot hand. And when you get into a seven-game series, I don't know if that works.
Well, speaking of seven-game series, Colorado lost theirs, and that means that they're out. So Jeff Probst.
Travis spoken.
As we sent 8 teams packing today, that is over and done. Now, I mean, for some people like Jeff.
Well, that was a very big blindside.
I don't know if there were very many big blindsides other than maybe the Kraken, maybe the Panthers in terms of getting by Boston. But when we talk about, you know, things that are happening in this series, again, best team wins, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. A couple of things before we get out of here today, as we got to get ready for Free Range Radio. Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. Some sad news out of the NHL today is Peter Klima passed away, unfortunately, kind of surprisingly, at the age of 58.
Yeah.
Like, Peter Klima, of all the guys who, I mean, again, he was a bit of a crazy player. He had that weird Jofa helmet and the mullet that he sported for a long time. But one of those players that, I mean, legitimately always showed up and always gave, you know, 110% when he went with whatever team he was with. Mm. So kind of surprising to see him, unfortunately, you know, end up on the wrong side of the news, which, again, I don't ever want to see. But, I mean, to each their own in terms of what happened there. Hopefully, friends and family are going to be okay. The other big name that passed away this week, Peter Good, for those that don't recognize that name because he's not really a player at all, Peter Good was the guy who designed the Hartford Whalers logo, the whale tail with the W and then the negative, the negative space for the H. He was the guy who designed that. He passed away at the age of 80 at his home in Connecticut, in Chester, Connecticut. So I'm pretty certain that the Hartford Whalers logo is one of the most recognizable in hockey, in all of sports, I'll say. But, I mean, he was the guy who designed it and created it. So, I mean, big loss on that side in terms of a well-known jersey designer, well-known logo designer that passed away.
It's a logo, and it's a vintage aesthetic that is still a bestseller today.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Again, it's just so recognizable, right? I mean, everybody loves that logo in terms of the thoughts and the memories that it brings, right? Like, it's just crazy in terms of some of that stuff that they have there as well.
Amazing design.
Also want to bring up the Team Manitoba team is ready to go in a couple of weeks. We're going to bring this up as well just before we go, because we had him on a couple of weeks ago. Kyle Collar was on talking about Manitoba at the Para Hockey Championship, the Canadian Para Hockey Championship. That their team has been picked. Kyle and Logan Bilodeau, who we had on as well, are going to be the two netminders for Canada. Corinne Wenge, who plays for the Women's National Para National Team, she is going to be one of the defenders. Alyssa White also going as well. And they have a pile of gritty guys going up front, including a trio of brothers, the Armbruster brothers, that are going to go and play as well. I've watched a couple of them play. They're fantastic in terms of the way they're playing. They have 3 players from Quebec that are going to be joining them as well, playing defense. There's no rule on where you have to, as long as you're registered with that team for the tournament. Apparently that's where you can play, including one national defender, Emily Charon-Pilote. She will join the defense as well, so they're going to have 2 national team members on defense in Wenge and Charon-Pilote. So kind of a bolstered Manitoba team going out there. Again, it's going to be happening from May 18th to 21st at the Complex Gilles Chabot in Boucherville, which is just a suburb of Montreal, from May 18th to 21st. Streaming will happen as well. You want to check online for that. Make sure you check back on Hockey Blog in Canada as well, as we'll have a little bit of that information as well on Hockey Blog in Canada when we get that set up and going. That, though, Jason, we're pretty much out of time. We've got about a minute left here. Anything you want to say? Anything you want to promote before we go?
May the 4th be with you, everybody.
It is Star Wars Day. I didn't even want to bring that up because, I mean, I know that everybody gets all crazy about that, but it is Star Wars Day, and I know Disney owns everything Star Wars, so we can't say too much about it. But do you have a favorite? I mean, obviously, everybody likes, you know, the Han Solo, the favorite non-important character, non-story-pushing character.
Oh, from, like, the films?
From the films, yeah.
Darth Maul.
Really?
Yes.
I was always big on the Ewoks. I always thought the Ewoks didn't get enough credit.
Darth, if you watch the Clone Wars television series...
Yeah.
Darth Maul is probably one of the best written characters.
Isn't he a main character? Doesn't he count as a main character, though?
Well, he's a villain in the first, in Phantom Menace, but he didn't hit his stride until Dave Filoni got his hands on him for the Clone Wars and brought him back from the dead.
I won't deny that. Actually, you know what? He actually probably should have been a much more menacing character as well, I thought. But either way, we're out of here for another week, folks. Stay tuned for your Orange Radio. Next week, we're live on location, though. We're going to be at Seven Oaks Arena for the National Aboriginal Hockey Championship. Tune in for that. It's going to be a blast for us out there. We're going to be talking to a bunch of guys, including Jeff. I believe Jeff Spencer is going to come back and talk to us as well. We had him on talking about the tournament before. So we'll get him on again, and we'll certainly see who else we can bring down to the table that day as well. But we'll be at the National Aboriginal Hockey Championship next week. That runs from the 7th to the 13th at Seven Oaks Arena. Get down there. Admission is free to get in to watch these games as well. Team Manitoba is the defending champion on the women's side. You want to get in and check that out, folks. So with that, we're out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM.
Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio. And now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg.